Yeah, that's right. This cut goes out to all y'all that's been missing us for mad years. One love, yo. Yeah, that's right. He's got a game. E.E. 1998.
If man is the father, the sun is the center of the earth.
This is Guns and Butter. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. I'm joined in the studio today by Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman, co-producers and co-hosts of Taking Aim, a weekly public affairs program which airs on KPFA's sister station WBAI in New York. Maya Schoen and Ralph Schoenman live here in the Bay Area and have been guests on Guns and Butter. Today we're going to talk about the world crisis being a crisis of imperialism. It looks for sure now that the United States, against all world opinion, is going to go it alone, I guess in conjunction with Britain perhaps, and attack Iraq. They came to this conclusion in a remote part of the world in the Azores. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Bonnie. A meeting the other day, there was a summit, and it took place in the Atlantic off the coast of Spain and Portuguese island of Terceira. Now, President Bush traveled 2,300 miles, and Prime Minister Tony Blair of Britain, 1,000 miles, and the Prime Minister of Spain, Jose Maria Aznar, 1,000 miles, for one and only one reason. If this meeting had taken place in either the United States, Spain, or Great Britain, there would have been millions of people in the street. And they would have. This would have not been a great photo opportunity for them, the moment when they were announcing their genocidal plans for Iraq. In Spain, for instance, just the day before the meeting, there had been a million people in the street. And as everyone knows, KPFA listeners, you had in the United States between Washington, Los Angeles, and San Francisco and other communities throughout the country, a million people in the streets. So, Ralph?
Yes, it's a measure of the isolation of the rulers, and I think it's important to emphasize that the enormous power that is concentrated in the hands of this tiny oligarchy that comprises the ruling class in the United States is at once an expression of their isolation, although it may seem paradoxical when so much power is centered there. But we must remember that the New York Times most recently updated the data of the Department of Commerce, which had established that about 2% of our population owns 90% of the national wealth. Now it is actually more like 1% that owns 95% of the national wealth and concentrates it in its hands. Just as we've discussed, Robert Townsend, the president of Avis and American Express, had calculated that the people who actually have control over what he called the commanding heights of the economy in this country number approximately 5,000 people. It's a tiny oligarchy that not only commands the vast wealth of this country and uses the government and the state as their private milk cow, but they preside over 70% of the world's natural resources and mineral and other wealth. We only have 5% of the population of this world within our national frontiers by any criterion that is an empire. This empire, in the hands of a tiny oligarchy, is pitted against the survival interests of the vast multitudes of humanity. That is a measure not just of their power, but of their extraordinary isolation. We have a sleeping giant in our vast, oppressed peoples of this world who are the victims of a sick and degenerating system addicted to war. That's what this present crisis expresses, as much the crisis of imperialism as the crisis of humanity.
To give Great Britain for an example, the over 120 members of the Labour Party were voting against a resolution for war. And the Foreign Secretary, Robin Cook, who's leader of the House of Commons, resigned, declared that he will not be complicit in this genocidal attack on Iraq. And you have also in Turkey, for instance, where despite the parliamentary vote, the United States military continued to unload the tanks and all the armaments that would be necessary for a northern front into Iraq. This was despite the parliamentary vote. With a new prime minister unable to have another vote to acquiesce in this northern front, the United States will still go ahead and have 60,000 U.S. Infantrymen coming in through Turkey, despite the fact that over 90% of the Turkish people have been in the streets and, 90% of the Turkish people oppose a war with Iraq. And this is true throughout Eastern Europe, too. While the United States, with its promises of military bases in Hungary and also with economic aid to various Eastern European countries, the people of those countries are opposed to going to war against Iraq.
The measure of this isolation and the degree of alienation from the vast majority of humanity is not unnoticed by the captains of capital. I think that the article by George Soros in the Financial Times on March 12th is instructive in this direction, because what Soros writes is the following. There is a parallel between the Bush administration's imposition of American supremacy and the boom-bust process of the economy, and notably the bubble in the stock market, he writes. The dominant position of American power is the reality. The pursuit of supremacy is based upon a misconception. And this misconception, writes George Soros, reflects the gap between reality and what comes after. It is unsustainable. During the self-enforcing phase of this power, this misconception will be tested, but it widens the gap. And he writes, the later the disparity is exposed and the reversal comes, the more devastating the consequences, unquote. The captains of capital are not unaware of the precariousness of the system, and in particular of the adventurism to which it is addicted inexorably, because this system sustains itself by the pursuit relentlessly of profit. And the military component, the military-industrial component of this capitalist economy is ever greater. Just in the space of 40 years, over $9 trillion had to be given over to the Pentagon. Now, that is more than the total value of everything in the United States that is produced, schools and sewers and housing developments, all taken together. They are cannibalizing the infrastructure of our society. And to sustain this agenda, they are destroying the gains of 100 years of struggle of working people, the social services, the health benefits, the education, the starving of funds of the state and the counties and the cities and the social services. There is a day of reckoning coming, as Soros himself is obliged to acknowledge. It is our task to prepare for it and to understand the class character and the structural nature and the institutional meaning of perpetual war for destruction, which is accompanied by the need to terrorize our own people, to instill in us a numbed acquiescence in these murderous designs. And that is where the category of terror is so essential ideologically to the entire project.
How did we get to this point, this crisis? Could we explore the roots of the present crisis? What about the neoconservative think tank Project for the New American Century, or PNAC?
Yes, Bonnie. Rebuilding America's defenses, strategy, forces, and resources for a new century was a report of the Project for the New American Century in September 2000. Now, in this report, it states explicitly, it's a blueprint for what is unfolded in the Bush administration. In fact, it even to the point where the amount of money that would be in the U.S. budget, the U.S. arms section of the U.S. budget, is stated in this report in the year 2000. And as a consequence, Newsweek, in this week's cover story, reports the U.S. will spend as much next year on the war machine as the rest of the world put together. That's 191 countries. And in this report of the PNAC, Project for the New American Century, it's interesting to look at who actually wrote the report. Thomas Donnelly, who was the principal author, he gathered up all the information, and that was a result of meetings and discussions of a large group of people. But Thomas Donnelly himself is the strategic communications director at Lockheed Martin, one of the top 10 defense companies in the United States. And he had been for many years on the Armed Services Committee in Congress. This is an insider. The PNAC report was put together by none other than Paul Wolfowitz, the Assistant Secretary for Defense, one of the most prominent of the neocons. Dove Zakim, who at the time of the report was in a defense planning corporation, but was appointed by George Bush to be the Undersecretary of Defense, the controller, the man in charge of how money is spent and overseen in the Pentagon. We also have Stephen Cambone, also appointed by Bush, who's the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence. And it's also interesting to look at the people who are now at Lockheed Martin, as I mentioned with Donnelly, but also at Northrop Grumman. You have all the defense companies, the major ones, represented in crafting the blueprint for worldwide hegemony in this blueprint. As well, you have from the RAND Corporation, the prominent defense think tank, Adam Schulsky, who in writing with his co-author is Zalmay Khalilzad, the very man appointed to oversee the Iraqi National Congress and the so-called opposition forces in Iraq.
He is, after all, one of the key point men for the RAND Corporation and their plans for permanent military conquest on the part of the United States over many decades. One of the interesting things about the PNAC, the Project for a New American Century, and by the way, Frontline, ABC, did a special on this very...
PBS.
Was it PBS? Sorry, Maya. On this very... group. They're also set forth in the March 17th issue of Salon in an instructive article called War Incorporated, American Corporations with Close Ties to the White House are Poised to Cash In on Saddam's Defeat, and they detail all of the corporations to which these very figures are linked, and of course key figures in the capitalist superstructure for whom war is the engine of profit and for whom conquest is the sine qua non of their continued mastery over the economy and over the planet. PNAC, the Committee on the Present Danger, the so-called neocons or chicken hawks, this particular sector of the ruling class, has a very concrete and specific history. There was an article on the front page of the magazine section of the New York Times which referred to an important meeting at the American War College with the Chief of Staff of the United States Army, Shinseki, introducing none other than Paul Wolfowitz. And in that particular introduction, Shinseki declaimed that since the 1970s, Wolfowitz and his associates had prepared for the dismantling of Iraq. He said it, as the New York Times wrote, with a drum roll. And it refers to the fact that the agenda of American imperialism for the Middle East and for most parts of the dominated world has been to utilize what could be called the pass-through or comprador regimes, the corrupt oligarchies that they install, who are essentially in place to arrange flight capital into the coffers of U.S. corporations and banks, and then they take their own cut. It's the neocolonial formula. It's been the response of capitalism and imperialism to the great anti-colonial and anti-imperial struggles of the 19th and the 20th centuries. But indeed, in the aftermath of the 1950s and 1960s, when the anti-colonial revolution was undermining these particular regimes, a wing of American imperialism was pursuing the design of displacing the regimes themselves and seizing direct control. And no more prominent amongst these were the rulers of the military-industrial complex in Israel. Israel having been installed and put into place in the Middle East as a cat's paw to pursue imperial aims and to undermine the anti-colonial struggle of the Arab peoples, to ensnare each Arab government in turn in conflict, or better, to empty the region of population and to capture more land. The Israeli agenda was well articulated by Oded Yinon, the Mossad operative, in the late 1970s when he defined a strategy for Israel in the 1980s, which was to dismantle each Arab state in turn into its ethnic and religious components based upon the millet system of the Ottoman Empire. That policy, which was embraced by the allies of Netanyahu and the Likud amongst American rulers, is the policy of what we now call the neocons, the American Enterprise Institute, the Wolfowitz, the Pearls, the Jay Garners, the Boltons, and indeed the Cheneys and the Rumsfelds, who are assimilated to it. Permanent war. Not one war, but a series of wars. A war designed to roll back the formal character of national independence in countries across the world. And that is their unrelenting imperial agenda. For many sectors of our rulers, it is reckless endangerment of their interests because it puts the United States into the position of having to now rule in the manner of having protectorates, virtually direct colonial control over vast masses of people. Nothing so clearly exposes the face of capitalism and imperialism as the designs of the neocons, as this now abiding pursuit of permanent destruction, permanent war, permanent occupation, and direct seizure of resources.
It is stated explicitly. This is not a covert plan, a cabal, meeting in secret. These documents are on the Internet, available at PNAC's website, available at the James Baker Institute at Rice University, James Baker having been the Secretary of State for the former President Bush, the father of our current president.
Bush 41, as they call him.
Yes. Right. Bush 41, Bush 43. And what we have here are their plans with the Council on Foreign Relations, which includes both the Democratic Party sector and the Republican Party sector, the two parties of capital. But to go back to the PNAC document, which is the blueprint, and which has been stated and reiterated in all President Bush's speeches.
And by the way, I just want to mention, Maya, that this is not arcane news. Almost all the mainstream media now, from the Glasgow Morning Herald to the Independent and the Observer and the Guardian in London to Salon in the United States, indeed in the Wall Street Journal itself, have acknowledged that the Center for the Present Danger, the Project for a New American Century, is the organized expression of a significant sector of the ruling class that has now seized the center stage of controlling policy, and that this has been on the drawing boards for them for 30 years, that they are linked to the Likud, that Netanyahu was a central agent, intelligence agency operative functioning under the name of John J. Sullivan, was their cat's paw instrument in facilitating this design. They have now captured the commanding heights, if you like, of ruling class policy and state power in the United States, in the pursuit of a naked imperialist agenda. Let's call it by its name. It has to be identified as such. And just one digression about this. You know, in the book that we did called Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, we set out that virtually every administration since 1964 had made preparations for direct seizure of Arab oil. Robert Tucker, in January 75, said, without intervention, there is the distinct possibility of an economic and political disaster bearing more than a superficial resemblance to the disaster of the 1930s. And he identified the area that had to be seized as the Arab shoreline of the Gulf and the hinterland beyond, a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. Design, policy, and intent. 30 years in preparation, but needing the pretext and the opportunity to seize the moment.
Let's look at their words in the introduction to this PNAC document. They state explicitly, quote, "The United States is the world's only superpower." And later, "At present, the United States faces no global rival." As a consequence, they create in here the step-by-step for each element of the military, be it Marines, Navy, or the infantry in the Army, what should be done throughout the world for the United States to maintain its supremacy and to have hegemony. They even talk about the building the empire in the same way that Britain had an empire that covered the world. They talk about controlling the world's seaways. And the way to do that is to set up permanent bases in countries throughout the world, particularly in South Asia, because they take as a given having bases in Iraq, military bases, the militarization of Iraq in the same way the United States has bases throughout Europe and is now expanding in Eastern Europe and incorporating Eastern European countries into NATO, expanding bases, for instance, in Hungary. So they talk about here particularly the alliance with Australia. That is why the United States has focused with Australia and is always touting Australia as one of its coalition partners, building permanent bases in Australia, Indonesia, and recapturing the Philippines for a permanent base. Why? The target is explicit in here. From Baghdad to Beijing, the real target is the economy of China, control of that economy, control of the definition of how China functions in terms of the state, of the social organization and the political organization of China. But most of all, it is to control the resources of Asia. And they also in here, without using Bush's term, axis of evil, which one of his speechwriters developed, they define the axis of evil. They say the regimes hostile to America are North Korea, Iraq, Iran, Libya, and Syria. And they talk about this posing a threat and how one by one, in sequence, they will go after each of these countries.
And actually, Maya, the Oded Yunon plan called for the fragmentation of each Arab country in turn, but the starting point was Iraq. Iraq was the critical point because it had enormous oil reserves, dwarfing even those of Saudi Arabia, and because they considered that Iraq was an organized industrial power that they themselves, meaning the imperialists, had foistered as such. Just to make very clear what the dynamics of this have been, in 1958 there was a national revolution in Iraq which overthrew the stooges of British imperialism, King Faisal II and Nuri as-Said. The Iraqi revolution of 1958 brought to power Abdul Karim Qasim. And he, Abdul Karim Qasim, and Hashim Jawad, his foreign minister, proceeded over the nationalization of oil, confining the oil companies to 0.1% of Iraq's territory. And that was the precipitating moment for the Central Intelligence Agency to put into play its operative in the right wing of the Ba'ath Party named Saddam Hussein, who assassinated Abdul Karim Qasim on behalf of the U.S. intelligence. And now the CIA and the Mossad, let me add, set Saddam Hussein up in charge of the Palace of the Damned, where he presided over a bloodbath of intellectuals, of students, of trade union leaders, of teachers, of village leaders across Iraq. Hundreds of thousands of people in the disappearance that the terror state has inflicted on countries across the world, as we know, from South Africa to Argentina to Nicaragua to El Salvador to Brazil, and indeed in Iraq and in other suffering countries of the Arab East. The Saddam Hussein regime was their instrument. In 1975, London Sunday Times, February 9th, the United States National Security Council has compiled a detailed operational plan, a top secret Department of Defense project to invade, as a first step, Saudi Arabian oil. The plan, codenamed Dahran Option 4, has been drawn up in the Pentagon and provides for across-the-board U.S. attack on the oil fields, which contain 40% of the world's known reserves. And indeed, by 1979, the Pentagon was stating what military people call the U.S. 100,000-man strike force, consisting of multiple divisions deployable anywhere, will be in place. But what we need to create, and I'm quoting directly, is a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can put into place that strike force. And it may turn out that the boogeyman may not be defined the same in Arabic as in English, unquote. 1979, brothers and sisters.
You're listening to Guns and Butter. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. I'm joined in the studio today by Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen of Taking Aim. Today, the world crisis is the crisis of imperialism. In order to effect this permanent war and the takeover of the Middle East, there needs to be a rationale. Now, with the fall of the Soviet Union, we lost our major opponent, and people talked about a peace dividend. That has certainly not worked out. Now, the Opponent is what? You describe it as the category of terror, that this was devised as our new enemy and our new and the administration's new rationale for permanent war.
Before Ralph addresses this, Bonnie, I again want to turn to this defining document, and there probably have been others before this 2000 document, which was done on the eve of Bush's presidential campaign and was set out to define his campaign and his presidency. It states in here on page 51, because they call this a process of transformation, the reinforcement of the military and creating a very large permanent army, and the use of space, actually, too, to have the missiles coming down, and they talk about leaving all the international treaties, which Bush has done, step by step, leaving one international treaty after another. It says in here that absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, this would be difficult to effect.
Yes, and indeed, Bonnie, your question about the category of terror is right on point, and it is a category, an ideological construct that was consciously designed and devised. You'll see it all over the meeting notes of the National Security Council, and in particular, the people around the Project for a New American Century, the American Enterprise Institute, were the architects or the for the implementation of this. In the young life of Netanyahu as a 27-year-old, the National Security Council assigned to him the task of creating a conference in Tel Aviv at which Bush Sr. and George Shultz and Baker and others were present to organize a campaign to attack the, quote, terrorists across the world. And the category of terror became the leitmotif for rationalizing and justifying the massive, massive rearmament that and buildup of the Pentagon and to prepare for preemptive and for unprovoked attacks by the United States. Look, ABC Nightline with Ted Koppel. March 10th, the plan. The neoconservative memo is a blueprint for the Iraq War. The Project for the New American Century, founded in 1997, with key figures Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, arranging for the removal of the Saddam Hussein's regime from power, but part of a far earlier plan developed by the neocons in the councils of state. The Nightline article is very detailed, even as the article in the American press, the American Free Press, under the headline, America Pearl Harbored. The fanatical war hawks have drafted this blueprint many years ago, preparing for bloody U.S. world domination. And what do they mean by being Pearl Harbored? They're referring, indeed, to Condoleezza Rice's declaration in the National Security Council is we need to contrive, we need to have, we need to possess a Pearl Harbor-scale disaster in order to be able to pursue our designs and to implement our plans. This also was articulated in the important article in The Nation by Jason Vest called The Men from JINSA, which is the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, and the CSP, the Center for for Social. What is a CSP? I'm losing my alphabets here. It's part of the
Center for Security Policy.
The Center for Security Policy. Thank you, Maya. You know, between the CPD and the PNAC and the CSP and
the CSIS. Well, it's amazing, Ralph, is once people get used to one and it's exposed, they turn around and they get funding and they just form another. They have these recombinations, whether it's with Gene Kirkpatrick or with Henry Kissinger or with Brzezinski.
Right. Well, the Jason Vest article delineates the Defense Policy Board's grand strategy for the Middle East developed since the 70s. Iraq is the tactical pivot. Saudi Arabia is the strategic pursuit. And Egypt is the prize, quote unquote. And here, indeed, Maya and Bonnie, the World Tribune article on February 27th, the United States will seek regime change next in Iran, Libya, and Syria. It spells out a timetable. The Daily Times here...
Ralph, it not only spelled out the timetable. It wasn't that this World Tribune newspaper was spelling it out. It was the result of an interview with Richard Perl, the chairman of the Defense Policy Board. It was Richard Perl who was spelling out that after Iraq, it was Iran, Libya, Syria next, and Richard Perl has a specific interest in Saudi Arabia. He is the one who is most advancing through the Defense Policy Board that there must be the remaking of the feudal client regime in Saudi Arabia, the regime that has been hand in hand with the major oil companies ever since World War One. World War II.
Pakistani intelligence leaked an article, a document to the Daily Times in Karachi, in Pakistan. Iran is next in U.S. sights. The decision has been taken after Baghdad, Tehran. So, from whatever quarter you seek your information, the established information, by the way, of the main media, it is very explicit. It is very clear. This is an imperial design that has been on the drawing boards, and the category of terror is the construct that they have required, because the conference on terror that took place in Tel Aviv was then followed up by a major conference on terror in Washington, D.C., with the same players there, from Wolfowitz to Pearl to Armitage to Libby Keith. George Bush Sr. and to Schultz. Okay. And this entire architecture, ideological construct, was centered around pretexts. Just as they said we needed a boogeyman to come in to have to be stopped, they were preparing for... There is not a single one of these groups that they have not penetrated with intelligence operatives that they have not funded from its inception. And part of the extraordinary documentation, by the way, that was done by, of all people, Fox News, because a four-part series on Fox News delineated 200 Mossad Israeli military intelligence operatives fanned across the United States, 60 of them centered in Hollywood, Florida, and these particular Mossad and military intelligence operatives having been tracking and in conjunction with, I say in conjunction with because they were in communication with Mohammed Atta from Hamburg to Venice, Florida, with a safe house two houses down from Mohammed Atta, not merely penetrating this whole entire apparatus, but in direct consort with it. And by the way, the putative hijackers that we're talking about here, beginning with Mohammed Atta, trained at U.S. military installations, the hands of intelligence all over this, the category of terror, a contrivance. It is the state facility for terrorizing the American people, from orange alerts to the specter of anthrax, which has the, as you know, the DNA fingerprint of military labs in the United States. This is a ruling class contrivance for intimidating us, for silencing us, for preparing our people to be in lockstep for imperial conquest abroad and repression at home.
That was the Pearl Harbor, 9/11. In the immediate aftermath, $50 billion additional for the war machine, and now almost $400 billion. They're about to embark on a war. There has not been a single appropriation explicitly for this war. So the and as when you look at what not only the Republican but the Democratic Congress people are saying, including Nancy Pelosi, we must stand behind our troops. We must stand behind the president once he made the unfortunate decision to go to war. That means that once these troops and once the bombing have started and he goes to Congress, as he has not done yet, for the appropriations, you will see them all, you know, like dominoes. They're going to be voting for the appropriation that takes money away from our schools, that devastates our Social Security funds that are being pilfered right now, that creates devastation throughout the United States with huge layoffs. Look at what's happened to United Airlines, which in declaring bankruptcy has gone to the courts to eliminate the union contracts. Union contracts, hard-fought contracts that preserve the benefits and the salaries of the workers at United Airlines. And this is going to happen in place after place, as Bush has done with the the workers who would be part of the Homeland Security Department and other departments saying that they should not function under union contracts. Also part of the demonization, the United Nations has been complicit in this category of terror by saying that Iraq had to disarm. One, it's not based on, it's based upon a lot of fabricated evidence. Week after week, you see within the established press the revelations that much that went into Colin Powell's presentation before the United Nations and the, President Bush's presentation was fabricated evidence, whether it had to do with tubes for aluminum tubes that the inspectors said couldn't in any way relate to nuclear power plants, or whether it had to do with other fabricated information, of such as the acquisition of atomic elements for making a bomb from the country of Niger, which again was revealed was based upon false letters. And this is what Colin Powell went with. And President Bush to this day keeps reiterating this information. Another important statement in this week's Newsweek, and I return again to this article because in the first paragraph it says, for more than 25 years, he, referring to Saddam Hussein, has sought to acquire chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons and has, in several documented cases, succeeded. He gassed 60,000 of his own people in 1986 in Halabja. This is lies and dissemination to this day by Newsweek, by President Bush, by Colin Powell, because all you have to do is go to federal documents themselves. On December 10th, 1990, a report issued by the Marine Corps Combat Development Command in Quantico, Virginia, prepared by Dr. Stephen Pelletier and Lieutenant Colonel Douglas Johnson II of the Strategic Studies Institute of the U.S. Army War Colleges, states explicitly, one, that such figures for any deaths within Halabja, there is no evidence, even that 5,000 people were killed, and two, that Iraq did not have the capabilities to use blood agents, didn't have these blood agents, didn't use blood agents while the Iranians did. Well, and yet over and over you have these lies. And again, this document is also on the Internet, put there by the Federation of American Scientists.
Bonnie, the United States armed Iraq for the specific purpose of subjugating its own people and for attacking the Iranian Revolution and amputating the oil-producing province of Khuzestan in the aftermath of the overthrow of the Shah. Of course, as you know, after Iranian national leader Mossadegh had nationalized the oil in Iran in 1953, the Central Intelligence Agency staged a putsch and reinstated the Shah, and the Israeli Mossad and the CIA created this terrible secret police, the Savak, that replicated in Iran what they had done prior with Saddam Hussein's regime in Iraq. Now, indeed, with the Iranian Revolution, there's a meeting in Kuwait between Brzezinski and Saddam Hussein and King Fahd of Saudi Arabia and the Emir of Kuwait, where they decide that they will arm Iraq to the teeth and send Iraqi forces to amputate Khuzestan, the oil-producing province of Iran, just as Kuwait had been amputated from Iraq by British imperialism or Katanga and Kasai from the Congo, to undermine and destroy the regime of Patrice Lumumba. So now we have Saddam Hussein as their cat's paw doing their bidding, and indeed they supplied him, Saddam Hussein, to the United States with chemical and biological weapons. Every single one of these chemical and biological weapons was manufactured in the United States, supplied by the United States, directed by the United States. The military operations in which they were deployed, both within Iraq and Iran, were overseen by American functionaries and officials. There is no, even Scott Ritter and others have been replete with documentation about this. the paradox and the irony of it all is that it was, as Meyer was indicating, and as the Pelletier report established, mustard gas that the U.S. had provided for Iraq and the assault upon Halabja. It was an Iranian assault using cyanide agents, which, by the way, had their genesis from the Israeli state. It's important to note. Strachia Wire, on the 25th of February, Bonnie, exposes an extraordinary thing by the American Gulf War Veterans Association. Gulf War veterans come forward to acknowledge and to document that the blowing up of the oil fields in Kuwait at the time of the first Gulf War was a special forces operation of the United States government itself. The Gulf War veterans, who were indeed part of those operations, came forward. The documentation is on the Gulf War veterans' website. They are masters of deceit. The masters of deceit have given us the category of terror. They are the people who would seek to bludgeon us into acceptance of the most murderous and barbarous plans that originate with the imperialists themselves. When they demonize and hold up as a boogeyman one Saddam Hussein, they are not only presenting their own creation, but they are creating here a figure whose very weaponry has its authorship with the American regime itself. A very, I think, illuminating article appeared in the St. Petersburg Times on March 16th. It says, the headline on this, in the St. Petersburg Times, "It's not Iraq, it's Anniston, Alabama." The subtitle, "The Cage of Chemical Weapons in Anniston, Alabama, 873,000 pounds of sarin, 1,650,000 pounds of VX nerve agent, 1,976,760 pounds of mustard agent, enough to kill and incapacitate tens of millions of people," and the article states it has been this way for 40 years. "The center for the production of these deadly agents, nerve gas, sarin, VX, chemical weapons, Anniston, Alabama. And they have leached into the soils, and they have affected the health of the surrounding population." But the detailed article describes how these very supplies of weapons of mass destruction, the real biological and chemical agents, have been disseminated to pliant and compliant regimes by American imperialism from the get-go.
You're listening to Guns and Butter. I'm Bonnie Faulkner. I'm joined in the studio by Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen of Taking Aim. The world crisis is the crisis of imperialism. What is this war in Iraq going to look like? What kind of weapons are they going to use?
It's unimaginable, Bonnie. You know, we talk about it, we organize about it, we declaim about it, and yet to have an emotional connection to what the meaning of this terrible genocide is difficult for us to integrate and to understand. These 3,000 missiles in a space of 48 hours is what is intended. Please keep in mind that in the last Gulf War, the first 41 days of that war, more tonnages were dropped on this small country than in the entire Second World War in all theaters of combat. And these are fiendish weapons. These are weapons that include incendiary gel, which is a high-flaring magnesium product that deprives the air of all oxygen and literally pulls the lungs and organs out of the civilian population below. It was described in the New York Times. A black gossamer volatile mist was used throughout Baghdad, incinerating entire sectors of the city, destroying all water supply, heat, and electricity. A bomb then ignites the gossamer and caused continuous explosions. A hellish inferno burns up everything in sight, the oxygen removed from the air. The New York Times in 1991 is even equally graphic. A substance renamed in cinder gel by the military burns with intense heat and sticks to anything it touches. It causes unspeakable casualties. It depletes the air of oxygen. Mass waves of napalm and incendiary-fueled fire remove so much oxygen from the air that the civilian population below suffocates even as the flames are soaring above. In 48 hours, they intend to replicate, and then some, the firebombings, the incineration of this country. They will destroy its entire infrastructure, its water supply, its electrical supply, its food distribution centers. The United Nations had already prepared, by the way, a report. And I should point out that that report not only indicates the massive devastation, they estimate as many as 11 million people will be in total starvation, 60% of the children will be starving, there will be epidemic disease, there will be a total breakdown of all infrastructure in the society. It is a war crime of untold proportions that these murderers in the White House are preparing to inflict on the suffering people, the people of Iraq. Have been so reduced by the perfidious United Nations sanctions, it really makes me sick, if I can be blunt about it, when I see this constant mewling and toning of the United Nations and the inspections are working and Iraq is being disarmed. This is the instrument of 1.5 million civilian deaths through starving these people to death through sanctions. Where does American imperialism enjoy the entitlement to dictate to sovereign peoples whether they can arm themselves in self-defense? Or conduct their own policies in the interests of their own people? How do we allow the rubric of the United Nations to become a pretext for American imperial imposition on suffering and exploited and devastated peoples across the world? They live on 30 cents a day in Iraq, and no small thanks to the United Nations for that. And now the documentation is that government workers are getting $5 a month, 17 cents a day. Thank the United Nations for that. The United Nations, which brought us what? The colonial occupation of Palestine and the expulsion of its population. The murder of Patrice Lumumba and the devastation of the independence of the Congo. The Korean War, with its pretext for aggression from the North, which was entirely a fabrication because there were special force operations for 6 months in the North of Korea, enticing defensive response for the Koreans, as I.F. Stone documented in The Hidden History of the Korean War. From Remember the Maine to the sinking of the Lusitania, there's to Pearl Harbor itself, to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, to the fabrications about the first Gulf War, where Saddam Hussein was led into rectifying his border with Kuwait by George Bush Sr., the pretext for war, sanctioned by the United Nations, the rubric for American imperial design. It is a shame for us to credit an organization, every one of whose member states is the same class composition as the capitalist ruling class imposes upon us in this country, as the justifying arena for predation. In Somalia, it was the United Nations that presided over the United States' destruction of all centers of food supply, of the razing of all the villages and of their wells, creating the very famine that permitted Conoco, whose offices were the headquarters of the United States Embassy in Somalia, to lay out their plans for seizing control of the destroyed Somalian countryside's oil. The United Nations is but the fig leaf for imperial design, and we can give it no credence. We can allow it not to be the arena through which these policies are to be imposed.
Back to the munitions, Ralph. That was eloquent, and it's hard to speak afterwards. But to go back to the munitions that will be used against the people of Iraq, Doug Roque, who was the U.S. Army physicist, health physicist, who was ordered by the Pentagon and General Norman Schwarzkopf to analyze and to, quote, clean up the mess of depleted uranium. He was also the former head of the Army, the Department of the Army and the Department of Defense, DU director. That's who he was. He came out with an impassioned statement the other day on March 15th, and he called what was going to take place in the use of DU a crime against God and humanity. And he is the one who knows what's going to happen. He said that the DU that was in combat in just the first Gulf War, there was 320 tons of DU munitions contamination left on the battlefield. In 1995, the U.S. military fired 10,000 rounds of DU munitions in Serbia and 31,000 rounds of DU munitions in Kosovo and Serbia in 1999. And the verified health effects are cancer, neurological abnormalities, chronic kidney pain, rashes, the end of vision degradation, uranium in the semen, sexual dysfunction, and above all, birth defects for generations and generations to come. Now, this attack, the use of DU by the weapons manufacturers, depleted uranium in is used as ballast in the Tomahawk missiles. It's used for armor-piercing equipment, and it's also used to line the tanks. The use of this not only has devastated the peoples of Iraq, peoples of Kosovo and Serbia, also the Gulf War veterans. One-third of the veterans the soldiers who fought in the Gulf, of the over half a million combat troops in the Gulf War, one-third of them are disabled, have applied to the Veterans Administration for disability as a result of their service in their deployment in the Gulf. Ralph?
The United States used toxic gases in Iraq. That's the article in The Independent on March 2nd. And the gases that they're describing, and it puts me in mind of the war crimes tribunal that we had on U.S. war crimes in Indochina when we documented the use of gases that explode the pupil of the eye, of not just gases but chemical and biological agents across Vietnam. And here we have U.S. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld specifically requesting of President Bush authorization to use a variety of gases, including VX gas, in Iraq. And the defense secretary said attacked the straitjacket, which he, as he called it, which had put restrictions on the use of such gas officially by the United States. General Richard Myers, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, stated that they were going to use them without restraint in Iraq. And indeed, the Sunshine Project under the U.S. Information Freedom of Information Act revealed that the United States is intending to use gases that directly attack the nervous system, and the Federation of American Scientists established that they are going to be using the same types of gases that were used in Moscow that incapacitated and killed those people during the hostage crisis. Weapons of mass destruction. The United States was the supplier of anthrax to Iraq. The Sydney Morning Herald on March 17th documented that the anthrax that had been made available in Iraq was exclusively supplied by Operation Manufacturers. And why the hell not? The United States and imperialism is not alone in doing this in the present. On October 14th, 2001, the Herald, the Sunday Herald, published an article, United Kingdom plan to wipe out Germany with anthrax. Britain manufactured 5 million anthrax cattle cakes during the Second World War and had operational plans to drop them throughout Germany in 1944. And indeed, it goes beyond that, because American Heritage magazine disclosed that Winston Churchill had given in a memo to his chief of staff in July 1944, General Hastings Ismay, which called for the, quote, the drenching of the cities of the Ruhr and all of the cities in Germany with poison gas. It may be weeks or months before I give you the direct order to drench or Germany with poison gas. And when we do it, let it be 100%. We must study and prepare this matter cold sensibly, says Winston Churchill, and not be affected by the psalm-singing defeatists who would try to obstruct us. Winston Churchill stated, and by the way, this was documented by Stanford University history professor Barton J. Bernstein, that Churchill had taken operational steps to release poison gas across Germany, and it was the same plan that Major General William N. Porter, chief of the Chemical Warfare Services with the United States Army in 1943, in conjunction with General George C. Marshall, U.S. Army Chiefs of Staff, and the New York Daily News, preparing the way we should gas Japan. You can cook them better with gas, said the Washington Times Times Herald. 135,000 tons of gas agents prepared to disseminate across the Japanese cities in World War II. These were not incidental plans. They were operational plans, and it consistent, I should mention, with the way in which Palestine was depopulated, because we now have the documentation that the Israelis, according to the documents of the International Committee of the Red Cross, used cholera in the water systems of Acre and used typhus in Gaza as a conscious method for ridding Palestine of its population. Imperial plunder goes with weapons of mass destruction and mass murder. It is keynote signature. They are projecting onto their victims the weapons of destruction that have always been the feature by which imperial control has been imposed.
What about our broad-based anti-war movement? This is more important now than ever. What principles do you think we should be organizing under? How should we be dealing as a movement with what is going on?
Well, Bonnie, I think that, as all of us have taken note, the extraordinary mobilization of people across the world, and notably at the point of production, the workplace, the labor movement, in resistance and opposition to this murderous imperial war, is something that must both give us heart and steel us for the preparation for a movement of a political struggle to replace this rotten system. And my feeling on the question of tactics and strategy centers on clarification and education and deploying our anti-war movement as a vehicle for enabling the mass of our people to see the true face of the oligarchy, the capitalist ruling class that oppresses us. We do not achieve that by linking our resistance to war to saying, let the UN do it. We do not educate our people by talking about inspections working, because inspections grant to imperialism the right to inflict its will on a victim people. We do not accomplish our aim by seeking to outflank Bush from the right, by talking about how an attack on Iraq will inspire new terrorist attacks on the United States, or as the U.S. Labor Against War stated, that it will inspire terrorist attacks on Western targets. This is to grant the ideological fiction and pretext why, on the basis of which this entire onslaught of permanent and preemptive war has been launched. Operation Atlas has been announced in New York, brothers and sisters. Operation Atlas is the militarization of the skies with attack helicopters and the SWAT teams in the air to hover over every part of New York City to monitor what we do in the anticipation of what? Terror attacks? They're telling us that the Ridge has stated that it is an inevitability, that there will be an attack on our water supply, on our food system, on our health facilities by, quote, the terrorists, unquote. That will happen, all right, as a pretext for martial law. That will occur as we mobilize. We have to expose the vicious nature of this ruling class. We have to document their hand in these operations that they impute to terrorists of their own creation. We have to craft our resistance around principled demands. No blood for oil. Hands off Iraq. Out now. We have to struggle against the repression that will be brought down under the cover of waging a war of predation across the world. We can give no quarter to our ideological opponents by signing on for their lies, for embracing their fictions. We have to speak truth to power. We have to educate our people. We have to arm them for the struggle. We have to build the political instruments that can challenge them for power. Because I am very seriously concerned about an anti-war movement that talks about Bush, 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 and doesn't attempt to examine an actual structure of power of which this Mortimer Snerd is but a transitory expression. It is not Bush, Bush, brothers and sisters. It is a capitalist ruling class, Republican and Democrat alike, and we will gain nothing if we allow our movement to be co-opted or channeled into the arms of the next faker to come along to lull us into a temporary acquiescence in the next murderous design.
Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen will be speaking Thursday evening, March 27th, 7 p.m. sharp at the First Christian Church of Vallejo at the corner of Tennessee and Colusa on Treason at the Top, The Dynamics of War and Repression at Home and Abroad, and Your Civil Rights. Thank you, Maya and Ralph.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Maya and Ralph can be reached at takingaim@pacbell.net or by calling 707 952-9995. Guns and Butter is edited and produced by Yara Mako and me, Bonnie Faulkner. To leave comments or order copies of the show, call 510-848-6767, extension 628, or visit our website at gunsandbutter.net.
The International Solidarity Movement and the Jewish Voice for Peace invite you to a lecture and book signing by Tanya Reinhardt. Tanya, a professor and journalist at Tel Aviv, her latest book is...